This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This is Case Closed. Welcome back. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday for another hour of old-time radio crime. We'll begin this week with Danger with Granger. Hear his story from 1956, titled Hired Help. After that, it's Dragnet and The Big Speech, their story from April 19th, 1951.
Yes?
I'm Nellie Payton, the new maid.
Oh, yes, I've been expecting you. Come in, please. I'm Mrs. Leatherby.
Glad to meet you, Mrs. Leatherby.
Your quarters are on the third floor. I suggest that you take your bag upstairs and refresh yourself. Then come down to my study. I'll give you your instructions.
Yes, Mrs. Leatherby, right away.
It's the first door on the right. I'm sure you'll like it.
Oh, yes, Mrs. Leatherby.
Hey, Millie, what are you doing here?
Lewis, I didn't know you worked here.
That's allowed. What are you doing in this place?
I got a job as a maid. Just think, we can be together.
Get inside.
Gee, Lewis, you act like you're mad or something.
You tell anybody you knew me?
Nobody asked me.
Why'd you come around here anyway?
I didn't know you were working here. You're the chauffeur for these people, aren't you?
Yeah. Now listen, don't tell anybody a thing you hear.
All right.
Don't say you know me. Don't admit you ever saw me before, understand?
Yeah, but why?
I'll fix it so we can meet downtown once in a while. I gotta beat it. I'll see you later.
Lewis, you're not mixed up in something crooked.
Don't talk.
Lewis, you're hurting me.
You open that face and I'll do more than that.
This is Steve Granger, private detective with a story about a fond mama who wanted to prevent her son making a misalliance, only to find murder in her menage. In just a moment, I'll take you back to... This is Granger. It was August when vacations were the vogue and business was vaguer than an absent-minded professor suffering from amnesia. I was suffering, too, from the heat. Granger speaking.
Mr. Granger, this is Mrs. Manfred Leatherby. I'd like to have you come out to my residence.
What about, Mrs. Leatherby?
It's a matter of such importance that I can't discuss it over the telephone. You shall be amply repaid for your time.
Uh-huh.
You'll come out immediately?
Why not? My best offer of the day. Mrs. Manfred Leatherby tossed me an exclusive address in Westchester. When I got there, I found the house was southern vintage with four white pillars, one of which turned out to be the butler. A minute later, I was closeted with Mrs. Manfred Leatherby.
I'm glad you were so prompt, Mr. Granger. This matter is very important to me. The girl is absolutely no good.
What girl?
Beverly Elkin, the girl that Dexter wants to marry. Dexter is my son.
Do I gather that you want this marital venture broken up?
I do.
Does he have money?
Only what I give him.
Turn off the supply. That'll bring him round.
Not Dexter. He's very strong-minded. I want this girl investigated, and I want to know where they go and what they do. I've already thought out a scheme whereby you can be introduced into the house as a family friend. My husband Manfred can be found any afternoon in the city. At the Sheepshead Hotel. In the bar. It should be easy to strike up an acquaintance with him.
Fine, fine. That's all I need.
Good.
Well, I might as well get right on my way.
Ah!
Who's that?
Sounded like the maid.
Oh, Mrs. Leatherby! Mrs. Leatherby!
Oh, Billy, for heaven's sake, what's wrong?
It's the chauffeur. He's lying on the floor of his room.
What?
Mrs. Leatherby, I think he's dead.
The young maid was right. When I found the chauffeur, there were no marks on him to indicate how he died. I did my duty and called the police. They arrived, went through the routine, and took the body away. Then Mrs. Leatherby had one sentence for me.
If you hurry back to Manhattan, Mr. Granger, you'll just be able to catch Mr. Leatherby.
The bar at the Sheepshead Hotel was crowded to the cash registers with middle-aged men, all of whom were healed like Rogers. I had an attendant point out Manfred Leatherby. 1 hour later... we were the best of friends.
Mr. Granger, your stories of adventure are like wine to me.
Thanks, Mr. Leatherby.
You're a man who's extremely sophisticated from travel. You've been around. All I've done is play the stock market, finance a few enterprises, and go home tired.
No vacation?
Oh, Europe last year, South America year before, Orient a few times, but nothing like you, Dan.
No, no.
Look here, Granger, are you busy this evening?
Oh, nothing too important.
Well, how about coming home with me? You can be my guest for dinner. Like to have you. Spend the night if you wish. Like you to meet my son, Dexter.
Dexter?
Yes, he's a fine boy, but Mrs. Leatherby, she's making it tough for him. Won't let him get married.
That's too bad.
You come along with me. You got 12 guest rooms, might as well use one.
By luring Manfred Leatherby into the invitation, I'd be able to appear in front of his son, Dexter, as a guest of his father's. That'd make my job of looking after him a little easier. But at the Sheepshead Hotel, I picked up an overnight bag, headed for Westchester. The door was opened by the maid who'd found the chauffeur's body.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Leatherby.
Good evening, Millie. Cute little thing. Just came to work for us recently.
Oh?
Millie, take Mr. Granger's bag up to, to my guest room.
The green and purple one?
Yes.
Yes, of course, sir. Right away.
I'll introduce you to my wife, and then show you your room.
Mrs. Leatherby's act, as though she'd never met me till tonight, was well done. She broke the news of the chauffeur's death to her husband. Then he conducted me to the door of my room and left me to freshen up. This was my guest room, done in a bilious purple and a green so fervent it was overwhelming. It had a large bed, comfortable chairs, and an occupant, the young maid, Millie.
Oh!
Well, if it isn't the little maid.
Yes, sir.
See, you've hung up my things. Very nice.
Thank you.
See, you've unpacked my bag, too. Very nice.
Thank you.
See, you went through it pretty thoroughly, too. Come here.
Don't, mister. Don't hurt me.
Why'd you search my stuff?
I was afraid.
You're afraid. So you go through my bag. What do you suppose I got in my pockets? Mouse traps?
I didn't mean that, mister. I'm scared on account of Lewis, the chauffeur who was murdered.
How do you know he was murdered?
Well, he wouldn't kill himself. We were too happy.
What's this we business?
Lewis and I were married.
This came as a bit of a shock, this news of the marriage between the dead chauffeur and the very live, very pretty young maid, Millie Payton. I stared at her, stared so hard that she got more nervous than ever.
Why are you looking at me like that?
How long has Lewis been working here?
Well, about a year, I guess. He never told me where he worked.
But he got you the job here, huh?
No. I didn't even know he was here. I used my maiden name.
And who did get you the job?
A girl told me about it.
What girl?
Her name's Benridge. Eloise Benridge.
Sorry, Mrs. Leatherby. I know it's not a good hour to call.
That sounds like the police. I'll take this up with you later.
I hate to disturb you, Mrs. Leatherby, but it's about that chauffeur of yours who died.
What is this?
Just how did it happen and where?
Well, Lieutenant Mike Harding himself.
Oh, no, not you, Granger.
What's a homicide man doing way out in the country?
Mr. Granger, do you know this officer?
We've met before, Mrs. Leatherby.
Granger, were you around when the chauffeur died?
Yep.
You remember there were no marks on him, and the doc's verdict was that he died by poison, self-administered?
Mm-hmm.
When we got a telephone call at headquarters telling us to investigate the chauffeur's death, saying it was obviously a murder if we can discover the truth.
Who made the call, man or woman?
Voice was disguised. I called the local boys. They asked me to come out here.
Mother, I'm terribly sorry I'm late. The convertible had a flat tire, and... Oh, what's wrong?
This is my son, Dexter. Steve Granger, and, the name again, please.
Harding. Lieutenant Mike Harding, a New York homicide.
Oh, yes, I'd forgotten.
Hey, what's the police officer doing out here?
I'll explain later. Get ready for dinner.
All right, Mother, just as you like.
Granger, I want to talk to you.
I shall leave. I'm not interested in your conversation.
Thanks. Now, Granger.
What?
Why are you here?
Ordinary job. Mother is worried that the wrong girl will marry little Dexter.
Little Dexter? Stands at least 6'4", looks like a heavyweight champion, and you call him Little Dexter.
First time I ever saw him. From Mother's chatter, you'd think he was undernourished.
Heaven forbid.
I told Lieutenant Harding about the maid, what she'd told me. I warned him to go easy on her, since the little kid was on the verge of hysteria. Then I went into dinner. Manfred Leatherby was chatting away to his son. Mrs. Leatherby sat at the head of the table, as formidable as an aircraft carrier.
Dexter, stop eating so fast.
Mother, I'm in a hurry.
Better do as you mother suggests, Dexter.
I'm sorry, but I've got an appointment. I'm late now.
You're not going out with that girl again.
Dexter wolfed down 2 pounds of meat, 3 baked potatoes, a large patch of lettuce and tomatoes, and got out of there. Mrs. Leatherby tossed me a knowing eye, but I leaned back for 1 second
Then I made an excuse to Manfred Leatherby.
But, Mr. Granger, one never goes to bed this early. Not even in the country.
I'm very tired, Mr. Leatherby. I'd like to get some rest.
Let the man go to bed, Manfred. I'll play some backgammon with you.
Oh, I mean, yes, dear.
I got out of the station almost as soon as Dexter. I sat one car in back of him. I saw him meet the girl at a quiet cocktail lounge in New York. Later, I watched them being seated in a more quiet eating place on the east side. The girl was neither homely nor beautiful. She was just another girl. I ordered something and made a mistake. I let Dexter get a look at me. 10 minutes later, he loomed over me as big as a house. A stone house.
Well, Mr. Granger, I thought you were at the house in the country.
Yeah, I was, Dexter, but I got a call. Had to get back to town, meeting a man shortly.
Oh, too bad. I thought you'd join my fiancée, Beverly Elkin, and me. We're over there.
Oh, is that where you're sitting? I didn't even notice.
If you've got a minute, come over. I'll introduce you.
I'm sorry, but I have to leave. I'll be seeing you. Don't stay out too late.
I never do. Wait, I'll walk you to the door.
I walked along with the young man, feeling like a tug in tow by a steamer. When we got to the door, his demeanor switched.
I'll step out with you for a second. Don't get a cab yet, Dorman. Now, Granger.
Yeah?
Don't bother snooping around after me, understand? I'm old enough to take care of myself.
I'm not snooping around.
Look, big shot, don't try to fool me. I know what you're up to. I know that Mother hired you.
What?
You want to take home a report to Mother, huh? Well, see this?
It's your fist. So what?
So if you don't want it smashing up your nose, keep it out of my business.
The boy held up a fist in front of my face, and its size was not calculated to inspire contempt. It was as big as a ham and looked twice as meaty. I don't mind running the normal risks of my profession, but at that moment, Dexter Leatherby didn't bear any resemblance to a normal risk. He looked more like a nasty rampage. After throwing me a final glare of dislike, Dexter Leatherby went back into the restaurant. I decided there was no point in standing on the pavement, shivering at the prospect of what the hulking youngster might do to me. I wound my way to the apartment of Cal Hendricks, my newspaper friend.
Steve, my boy, you look as preoccupied as a bride over a first biscuit.
Have you not to visit the ultra Manfred Leatherbys?
Oh, and that pseudo-southern baronial estate of theirs? Or cook?
Some Dexter is gadding around with the girl he wants to marry. Mama wants to mix it.
Dexter is just a big bear.
I know. He just waved his paw in my face.
Now, he's quite a boy around town. Had quite a long run with a nightclub singer. Eloise Benneret.
Say that again.
Eloise Benneret.
Oh. Where does she live?
Well, I don't know. But there's a man who might locate her. Name's Norman. Runs the Ship's Grill over on 10th Avenue.
Yes, I'll step over to the Ship's Grill.
Take along an anchor or you'll drift.
Quiet or I'll sink you. This was the Ship's Grill. It resembled a ship like a motorcycle resembles a Cadillac. I looked for the Ship's Grill captain and found him, leaning down at the end of the bar.
You were looking for me?
Yeah. I'm Steve Granger. I want to ask you a question.
You're the private eye. What's the snoop act?
Oh, nothing much. Just like to know where Eloise Benneret is.
What do you want her for?
She knew Dexter Leatherby. She also recommended a maid to the Leatherbys.
That's not all. Go on.
Okay, here it is. Dexter wants to marry some gal named Beverly Elkin. She's a society bud, but the bloom isn't big enough for Mama.
And the old lady wants it killed?
Yeah.
Where's Eloise fit into this?
I don't know. I'd like to find out.
Here. I'll write down an address. Go there. Maybe you can do yourself some good.
Who are you?
Just a fellow trying to get along.
Well, get along. Down the hall. Take your foot out of the door.
I want to talk to you about Dexter Leatherby.
What about him? And who are you? I've seen you around.
I'm Steve Granger.
Oh, yes, the snooper. You knock these days instead of peering through keyholes, eh?
I want to ask you something. How come you told a kid named Millie to get a job with the Leatherbys? Because you knew her husband was their chauffeur and she didn't?
Why should I talk to you?
If you'll read the paper, you'll find that Lewis, the chauffeur, is dead. Poison.
Oh, no.
Care to talk?
I sent Millie out there for the job. I wanted her in the house. I wanted her to find out something for me.
What? Toby! Are you all right?
I think so.
Stay away from the window. There's no sign of him. I went to the front window and ran.
He shot at me, Granger. I felt the bullet. He wanted to kill me.
Who?
I don't know.
We'll get you stuff. Let's get out of here. I waited while Eloise Benard got some things together, and we headed towards the front door. As I opened it, I found an unpleasant shock in front of me. Its name was Lieutenant Harding.
Well, Granger. Are you around every time a shot is fired in New York?
You're too complimentary, Lieutenant Harding.
Who's this?
Eloise Benard.
Oh, yeah, the singer. What happened?
Somebody threw a slug at her.
Why?
Please, Mike, I'm no mind reader.
Granger, I thought you were following young Leatherby around, trying to break up that romance. What are you doing in Midtown Manhattan with a singer?
Just a second. Did you say romance with young Leatherby? What romance?
Some girl named Beverly Elkin. Why?
Nothing.
Were you mixed up with young Leatherby, too?
I...
Lieutenant, suppose you take Miss Benard into protective custody.
Why?
Because you look so charming when you're protective.
Granger, if this is another of your famous gags, your next job will be for the state. Pension permanently, I hope, up the river.
I got Eloise Benard aside, whispered to her to say nothing, watched Harding hand her into the police car and drive off. I went back to Norman Ship's Grill. I was slightly furious. See, Eloise Granger? You pulled a smart caper, Norman.
Caper?
You tipped me on Eloise Benard's address. And either you or a pal follows me, you listen to what I've got to ask.
Why the gun act?
The shot at Eloise through the window.
Shot? What are you talking about? What happened to Eloise?
Somebody tried to put her away.
Where is she?
At police headquarters under protective custody.
You telling the truth?
Call Lieutenant Harding and make sure.
Lucky for you, she didn't get hurt.
Why?
Because Eloise Benard happens to be my sister.
Your sister?
Yeah.
Norman, how'd you find out that Lewis was killed up at the Leatherby's place?
Millie called and I...
So, the little maid tipped you off.
I didn't say that.
And then you called police headquarters and just mentioned that Lewis's death could have been murder, not suicide. It was you, Norman, wasn't it?
I thought I was right.
And who is the killer?
I'm not talking, Granger. I'm not saying a thing.
I tried to get another word out of Norman for 10 minutes, then gave it up and called Lieutenant Harding on the phone. He agreed to send a car up and take the bar owner in for questioning. I said I'd come along. I wanted a word with Norman's sister, Eloise.
Granger, what is this all about? Why did you have me brought down here and locked up?
Because I didn't want you hurt, Eloise. Now I want to ask you something. Why did you get that funny expression on your face when I mentioned a romance between Dexter Leatherby and Beverly Elkin?
Did I?
Stop putting on the innocent act.
I don't remember any expression on my face.
Miss Benard, you're mixed up in a killing. You realize that? Somebody tried to put you away because you must know something about it.
Do I?
You got the maid Millie her job near her husband. Why?
All right, I'll tell you. Lewis was up to something. I wanted to find out what it was. But I never did.
So that was all the girl would tell me. I went back to Harding's office and found him grim-faced and angry. Norman wouldn't answer any kind of question. Millie said he'd take care of his own business his own way. A police officer could get into the record bureau, and Harding did after I suggested something. Then we got a prowl car out of the garage and drove off to the Leatherby place.
hope you're right, Granger.
Yeah, so do I.
How are you going to get into the house?
Wake up the butler.
Are you crazy? You'll wake up everybody.
You forget. I'm a guest here. The butler was still up. Remembered me, let me in. But instead of going to my own room, I headed for the one occupied by the maid, Millie. Mrs. Granger, don't make a sound, Millie.
What do you want?
Close the door.
But Mrs. Leatherby...
Never mind, Mrs. Leatherby. I want to know something about you, Millie.
What?
Why did you go through my bag? Because you knew Lewis was up to something. Because you thought I was either a gangster or a cop.
I was afraid of you.
And you warned your husband Lewis, didn't you? Not to go through with what he was doing. Tell me the truth.
Yes.
What was he doing?
When I walked into his room, he was writing a note. I slipped it off the desk.
Where is it?
I destroyed it.
Was it written to Dexter? Did it ask for money?
Yes.
Is that what Eloise wanted you to find out?
Yes. Yes, it was.
I told the girl to stay where she was, went downstairs, and let in Lieutenant Harding. We made one cautious phone call to Dexter's love, Beverly Elkin. Then we woke up Mr. and Mrs. Leatherby.
Mr. Granger, what is the meaning of this? I really don't think you should wake us at this hour.
Mrs. Leatherby, you implied me to see that your boy Dexter wouldn't marry Beverly Elkin.
Well?
And Mrs. Leatherby, I'm happy to say that Dexter won't marry her.
Really?
Because he's been married for some time to a girl named Eloise Benneret.
Oh, dear me.
Dexter's in trouble, too. It looks like he was the one who poisoned the chauffeur, Lewis. Lewis was blackmailing him.
But he couldn't have.
It's also possible he shot at his own wife tonight. Afraid she might reveal that they're secret. I'll have another goat chops. Pleasant editing. It's also possible he shot at his own wife tonight. Afraid she might reveal their secret to me.
That's incredible, Mr. Granger.
Where is Dexter now?
I don't know.
At him, Granger?
Come in, Dexter. The police and I want to talk to you.
The police? He's cramming. Come on, Harding.
Wonder which way he went.
Certainly dropped out of sight. Hey, there he goes. Over to that other place.
It's one of those big houses. Looks like it's been closed.
Look, he's running up on the porch. Look out, Granger. He's gone inside.
Hey, this place is rotten with age.
Yeah. Hold it. You got a light?
Yeah.
Shine it up those stairs. Okay, Dexter. Come back down and we'll shoot.
Come and get me.
You're under arrest. Come on, come down. Harding, look at that stairway. It's giving way. Dexter, look out!
When the rotting stairs in the old house broke apart, Dexter Leatherby fell from the second floor right through to the cement floor of the basement. He lived long enough to confess the poisoning of Lewis, the chauffeur, and shooting at his own wife, Eloise. The coroner was summoned, and Lieutenant Harding took care of the details. I bumped into him a few days later.
We played young Dexter's death down, Granger. No sense in hurting his parents and Mike's people.
They took it hard enough as it was.
That Eloise Benneret, she took it well, too. She and her brother filled in the details.
Well, that is that, Lieutenant.
Including your fee. That, I presume, flew out the window.
You Steve Granger?
Yeah.
Special message service. Sign here.
Thanks.
Something interesting?
It's from Mrs. Leatherby.
Oh?
Remember your crack about my fee flying out the window?
So?
Buying this check, I'd say it just flew in the door. Steve Granger again. You've just heard one of the most interesting cases in my files. And I'll have another one for you. So be around next time.
The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to robbery detail. A doctor is severely beaten, robbed, and left in critical condition. Suspicion points to a narcotics addict. Your job? Get him. You'll be amazed when you compare Fatima with other long cigarettes.
You'll find they now cost the same. But in Fatima, the difference is quality.
You see, Fatima is the quality king-size cigarette because it contains the finest domestic and Turkish tobaccos superbly blended. And Fatima is extra mild, with a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette.
So compare Fatima yourself. Fatima's now cost the same as other long cigarettes, but your first puff will tell you...
Ah, that's different.
Yes, in Fatima, the difference is quality. Ask your dealer for Fatima, the quality king-size cigarette. Best of all long cigarettes. Start enjoying Fatima tomorrow.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, August 7th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. It was 1:15 p.m. when I got to 4656 Collis Avenue. The front door.
Is that you, Joseph?
Yeah, Ma, it's me.
I didn't expect you so soon.
Well, I'm off for lunch, and Ben and I were in the neighborhood, so...
Oh, well, I'll get the telegram.
Thank you.
I must say, I'm glad you could get home. Telegrams always make me nervous. Nobody ever sends a telegram unless it's important here, so...
Thank you. Yes, they do, Ma. Some people send wires to invite you to lunch or to a reception or something like that.
Is that so?
Sure. You've just forgotten, haven't you? I've gotten them before like that.
There's no way to do, anyhow.
Why not?
People always associate frightening things with telegrams. Well, aren't you going to open it?
Oh, yeah, sure. Now, if you were worried, you could open it, Ma. It'd been all right.
Well, you know I never open anything addressed to you, Joseph. Anything important?
It's from Belmont, my old high school.
Oh, yeah.
They want me to come up next week. They're having some sort of assembly up there. Want me to talk to the student body.
Well, that's nice. You going to go?
Yeah, I think I better, don't you? I'll have to clear it through Captain Sheldon, though.
Yeah, I think it's awfully nice for them to remember you. What are you going to talk on, to say?
Yeah, police work, it says here. I'll have to think of something to base it on, though, won't I?
Well, you'll have to memorize it, Joseph. Doesn't look well for a man to stand up on a platform, read a prepared talk.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's Ben. I gotta go, Ma.
Would you and Ben like some lunch? I can fix you something in about a minute.
No, we haven't got time, dear. I'll see you later.
I don't know why they couldn't have written a letter instead.
What's that, Ma?
I said they could have written you a letter. Besides, it's much cheaper than a telegram.
Yeah, Ma. I'll see you later.
Bye, Joseph.
Bye.
Just got a call, Joe. They want us to call the office.
Oh, well, I might as well do it from the house, huh?
Yeah.
All right, I'll be right back.
Right.
It's just me again, Ma. Came back to use the phone.
You're all right, Joseph.
City Hall.
2511, please.
2511. Robbery Chandler.
Well, this is Friday, Glenn. What? I can't hear you, Glenn.
Got one for you.
Wait a minute. I can't hear you. Hey, Ma, would you hold that vacuum for a minute, please? I can't hear.
Oh, all right, Joseph.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Glenn. What'd you say again?
That's all right. That young kid hit again. Doctor's office.
Yeah?
It It's that same kid, only this time he got a little rough. Victim's at Georgia Street. He's still carrying that gun.
Did he use the gun?
To beat the man with. Victim's a 55-year-old doctor. No reason for it, Joe.
All right, we'll get right on it.
Right, bye.
Yeah, bye. Okay, Ma, I'm all through.
All right, son.
Anything?
Yeah. That young hype hit again. Doctor's office beat him up pretty bad. He's down at Georgia.
Great combination, isn't it, Joe?
What's that?
Arm full of narcotics and a loaded gun.
Monday, August 7th. Since June 27th, Ben and I had been assigned to a case involving a young narcotics thief. For 7 weeks now, he'd been robbing every possible source available to him of narcotics. Since the inception of the investigation, we'd seen this young criminal develop from a small-time sneak thief to a full-fledged, armed, and vicious thug. The descriptions of the young thief taken from his various victims tallied almost to the letter. Blonde, light complexion, small stature, 5'7 to 5'10, nervous and unusually juvenile in appearance. Everything possible was being done for his quick apprehension. Hundreds of mugshots were screened and shown to victims. No identification. 3:30 p.m., we checked back in at the office. Went to see Sergeant Ed Hall, Narcotics Division.
Chandler said you went over to Georgia Street to see that doctor.
Yeah, that's right, Ed. Short visit. Poor guy.
Pretty bad, huh?
No, the guy's really a mess. Kid must have worked overtime on him.
And what's his condition?
Still critical when we left. They wouldn't let us stay long. We got a description. It's the same kid.
Doctor's name was Gannon, huh? 55 years old.
Yeah, pistol whipped him. Knocked out 7 of his teeth, fractured his jaw. Doctor was wearing glasses. They don't know if he'll see out of his right eye anymore.
Well, this puts Junior in the big leagues now.
Yeah, it sure does. We got out a supplementary all points on him. Here's a list of the junk that he got. It's quite a haul here.
Yeah. Morphine, quarter grain, 30 vials. 5 vials, half grain codeine. Dolphine, quarter grain, 6 vials. Yeah, he did all right. Long list here.
We got that from the nurse. She was out to lunch when it happened. It's a small office out there, and the doctor closes up at noon. Nurse goes out to lunch, and he eats in the office. That's when the kid got to him.
He knew when to hit, didn't he?
Yeah.
Well, our boys haven't been able to turn up a thing for you. Nobody seems to know the kid.
Well, the amount of stuff he hauled out of that doctor's office, something ought to show, shouldn't it?
Should, yeah, with a haul like that. You got anything at all to work on?
Yeah, that car that was used on the job. Still got it staked out.
Well, we just picked this up from the report counter.
Yeah.
Car was reported stolen 2 hours after the robbery. It's a little bit of a break, huh?
The report was taken out at the Wilshire station. Mrs. Irving Adams states that her husband had notified her that the car was stolen from him while he was at work today. Said he always parks it out in front on the street.
We haven't checked it out yet, but we figured it was a good place to start, maybe.
Wait a minute. What'd you say that name was?
Irving Adams.
Oh, let me see that report. Well, this Adams is a user. He's up in county now, waiting trial.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, Walker and I picked him up. I just talked to Adams up in the county jail this morning.
How long has he been in?
Let's see. It was last Tuesday, July 30th.
The car couldn't have been stolen from Adams today if he's been in jail for a week.
Well, there's one guy can figure it out for you. Adams.
4:05 p.m. We went up to the 10th floor of the county jail, the interview room. We talked to Irving Adams for an hour. He said he wanted to cooperate, but he couldn't explain his wife's action in reporting the car stolen from him. He kept repeating that he knew his wife was not involved in anything, that she was innocent of any complicity in the case of the youthful gunman. He could give us no information on anyone fitting the gunman's description. He insisted that the entire matter was a mistake and that his wife could clear everything up if we'd just talk to her. 5:20 p.m., Ben and I drove out to 239 West 92nd Street, the Adams residence. It was a small white bungalow trimmed in red. The front lawn needed cutting and care. There were 4 bottles of soured milk on the front porch along with several old newspapers. The front blinds were down, and although it was still early, the front porch light was burning. The other homes in the neighborhood appeared to be neat and well kept. The screen door was ajar and supported by 1 rusty hinge. 5:21 p.m.
Looks like nobody's home.
Well, let's give it a try, huh?
Give me a minute, I'll cover the back.
Right.
Yes?
Police officer, my name's Friday. You're Mrs. Irving Adams?
Yes, that's right.
Well, I'd like to talk to you about your stolen car.
Have you found it?
Well, yes, we have. Can I come in?
Place is in such a mess. Can't we talk here?
Well, if you don't mind, I'd rather come inside.
All right. Don't look at the house. I've been kind of sick. Haven't felt much like cleaning up.
All right. You alone here, are you?
Right now, my husband's at work.
Mm-hmm. Mind if I go through the house?
You mean search it? You got a warrant?
No, I just want to go to the back door.
What for?
Well, my partner's around back there. This the way to the back door here?
That's right.
This it?
It's locked. Key's in the door.
All right. Hey, Ben?
Yeah, everything all right?
Yeah, fine.
Is he a police officer, too?
Yeah, that's right. Is this all there is to the house here?
What do you mean?
Well, just these three rooms here.
Yes, that's all.
I thought you said you were alone here.
I am.
Now, who's that woman lying down in the other room?
That's Catherine. I didn't want you bothering her. She's been sick, too. She sleeps most of the time. I just forgot about her.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else around?
No, nobody.
No, I mean anybody sick or otherwise. Anyone besides you and this girl in there?
Well, you've been in every room in the house except the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. This it here?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't understand all this. I reported my car stolen, and you come out here and search my house. If I did steal my car, I wouldn't hide it in here.
Yeah. Ben, want to come in?
Yeah.
Could you tell me something?
Yeah.
Why are you here?
Well, I told you we found your car. This is Sergeant Romero.
How do you do?
What's the trouble? Anything wrong?
Who'd you say your car was stolen from?
From me. It was my car.
Is that the way you made the report, Mrs. Adams? It was stolen from you?
I think so, yes.
Ms. Adams, according to the report that you made out this morning, you stated that the car was stolen from your husband, isn't that right?
Is that what I said?
Yes, ma'am, that's right.
I don't remember. We both used the car so much. I forgot.
Well, now, which is it, you or your husband?
I'm not sure.
You've been drinking, have you?
A little bit, just to ease my nerves. I haven't been feeling well.
It's obvious you're not drunk, Mrs. Adams. Why don't you keep your story straight?
Well, officers, I am telling the truth.
Well, your husband's in the county jail. He's been there for a week. The car couldn't have been stolen from him. Now, could it?
I didn't say it was stolen from him.
Is this your signature, Mrs. Adams?
Yes, sir.
This is a copy of the auto theft report that you made at the Wilshire Division.
Yes.
Well, now, is this report a true one or a false one? There's a penalty for making a false report, Ms. Adams. I'm sure you're aware of that.
I only want my car back.
Who was it stolen from?
Whatever it says there, my husband.
Mm-hmm. Now, we just told you that he's in jail. He's still in there. We just talked to him. The car couldn't have been stolen from him. Have you got anything to say to that?
No.
Well, I think we better go downtown where you can sit and straighten yourself out and give us some right answers.
I don't want to go to jail.
That's just where you're going if you don't snap out of it and come up with the truth.
I know who you want. It's Rex Burley, isn't it?
Who's Rex Burley?
Young kid, blonde, small. He told me he was in some kind of trouble with the car. Said if I tell the police it was stolen, it'd be all right that way.
Mm-hmm. Do you know where he is now?
No, I don't.
You sure about that?
That's the truth.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
Catherine's awful sick.
She always sleep this heavy?
Only when she's sick.
She's really out, isn't she?
Yeah.
Look at her leg.
Yeah, she's a user.
Say, this girl's on narcotics, Ms. Adams. Are you a user?
No, I'm not. I don't know where Catherine gets it.
How about Rex Burley?
He's on it, too. Maybe she gets it from him.
Is there any stuff in the house now?
Not that I know of.
You want to tell us where Rex Burley is?
I don't know. He called here about an hour ago. Catherine talked to him.
Mm-hmm.
Did he tell her where he was?
Yes, he did. She wrote it down on a piece of paper.
Where's that paper?
Under her pillow.
You are listening to Dragnet. From beginning to end, Dragnet is the authentic story of your police force in action. Now, from beginning to end, the Fatima story. Actual convincing proof that in Fatima, the difference is quality. Quality of tobaccos. The finest domestic and Turkish varieties, extra mild and superbly blended to give you a much different, much better flavor and aroma. Quality of manufacture. Smooth, round, perfect cigarettes. Rolled in the finest paper money can buy. Manufactured in the newest and most modern of all cigarette factories. Quality, even to the appearance of the bright, clean, golden yellow package. Carefully wrapped and sealed to bring you Fatima's rich, fresh, extra mild flavor. Because of its quality, its extra mildness, its better flavor and aroma, more long cigarette smokers are now insisting on Fatima than ever before. So if you smoke a long cigarette, compare Fatima. You'll find they now cost the same. But your first puff will tell you...
Ah, that's different.
Yes, in Fatima, the difference is quality. Insist on Fatima. Start enjoying the quality king-size cigarette. Fatima. Best of all long cigarettes.
Monday, August 7th, 6:30 p.m. The young girl who was identified as Catherine Dorrance was awakened, and she produced Rex Burley's address. She stated that she'd known him for the past year. She had just graduated from high school and gave her age as 18. In talking further with both Iris Adams and Catherine Dorrance, we found that the description of Rex Burley checked out with that given us from the suspect's victims. They both stated that, as far as they knew, it was his true name, that he had no friends or associates known to them. A check with R&I showed no record on the name Rex Burley. At 6:37 p.m., Sergeants Hall and Walker from Narcotics Division arrived and continued the investigation of the two female suspects. A stakeout was placed on the house at 239 West 92nd Street. The address we got from Catherine Dorrance was a hotel on Washington Boulevard. We drove out and checked with the clerk. We asked if he had anyone registered under the name of Rex Burley, and he told us no. We gave him Burley's description, and he said that a young man similar to that had registered and was in room 210. We got a pass key from the clerk. We walked up to the second floor.
This is it.
Lights on under the door.
Yeah. Careful, huh?
Yeah.
Who is it?
Open up. We want to talk to you.
What about?
Is the key in the door?
Yeah, pass key's no good.
All right, come on. Open up, police officers.
He isn't going to open.
All right, let's hit it. Once more.
Yep. Window's open. Up the fire escape, Joe. Police officers, hold it up.
Watch it. You all right?
Yeah.
All right, come on, let's go. All right, hold it up there. He doesn't want to stop.
He's over the side, under the roof.
All right, come on. All right, easy.
See him?
No, it's pretty dark. All right, come on. Easy now. All right, easy.
Over there on that side, can you see him?
No, it's too dark.
Watch that skyline. He's over there in that corner. See him?
Yeah, now he's gone.
Must have ducked back down. Well, he's in that corner.
All right, let's take him. Now keep down. You circle around from that side, I'll go around this way.
Right.
Be careful, keep down. All right, throw that gun out. Get your hands in the air. Walk toward the middle of the roof.
All right, here's the gun. I see him, Joe. I got him covered. You all right?
Yeah.
All right, keep those hands up.
All right, stand still.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
All right, get your hands behind you. Ben.
Let's go, Burley.
I didn't mean to do it. I was wrong. I know I was wrong.
You should have thought about that a long time ago.
How old are you, Burley?
20.
You're living pretty high, aren't you?
I had to have this stuff. I needed it. How else could I get it? I didn't have the money to buy it.
You didn't have to get started on it. Come on, let's go.
I didn't want to get started. All of a sudden, I was just on it. I couldn't do anything about it. You don't understand. There was just somebody else to explain it to.
There is, but they won't understand it either. Monday, August 7th, 8:40 p.m. Rex Burley was taken downtown to the robbery division for further interrogation. He told us that he was in his senior year in high school when he got started on narcotics. He kept repeating that he didn't mean to get started. He readily admitted his participation in 6 narcotics robberies. He told us that he got Catherine Dorrance, his 18-year-old girlfriend, started on dope. Gene Bechtel took his statement and a complete report was made. A partial recovery of the stolen narcotics was made from his hotel room. The remainder had been found at Irving Adams' residence on 92nd Street. Both female suspects, Iris Adams and Catherine Dorrance, were filed on for violation of the State Narcotics Act. A show-up was scheduled for August 8th to allow a positive identification from Rex Burley's victims. We received word from Georgia Street that Dr. Gannon's condition was improved. The suspect was transported to the main jail where he was booked. It was 10:38 p.m. when I got to 1456 Collis Avenue, the front door. Yeah, Ma.
Have you had your dinner?
No, I'm not hungry.
We'll have to eat. I'll fix you something.
Well, I'm kind of tired. I'd just like to sit down for a minute.
All right. Well, there's evening paper.
Oh, thank you.
Well, what'd you do to the sleeve of your coat?
Oh, guess I must have ripped it, huh?
You slip it off, I'll mend it after I fix you some dinner.
Well, why don't you sit down and work on it now if you want to? I've got something I'd kind of like to go over with you.
All right.
You remember that telegram from Belmont this morning?
Yeah, your old high school.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I got an idea for a speech, maybe. Just made a few notes here. Mm-hmm. Wrote down some of it. You think you feel like listening to it? See if it's okay?
All right. Did you write the speech today?
Well, just parts of it. I hadn't written it clear out yet. I just got a few notes. I wanted to see what you thought of it.
All right. Well, let me have your coat, son.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you.
Now let's hear you talk.
Well, remember, it's not written down yet. It's just kind of hit and miss as I go along, but mm-hmm. I think I can get the thought across, and then I'll put it all down on paper.
All right.
Mr. Fisher, that's the principal up there, you know.
Yes.
Mr. Fisher, members of the faculty and students. I'd like to tell you about a young boy who started out in high school and ended up on the roof of a downtown hotel dodging police bullets. I'd like to tell you about his girlfriend, 18 years old and a dope addict. This young fellow started out on narcotics in search of a new thrill, something new that he hadn't experienced in his young life. He was still in high school when a group of the more high-living youngsters used to congregate at the local malt shop. Well, that's not so good, is it?
No.
Well, maybe it sounds better this way. There was a malt shop on the corner where some of the youngsters used to get together after school. Kind of a place where if you had the right connections, and our young boy and girl did, you could get a drink of liquor in the back room. Well, the high school faculty knows all about this local malt shop, and they inform the authorities, and pressure is brought to bear. But the man who operates the place is clever, if you can call the operations of a man like this clever. He knows how to cover up, how to keep the front room legitimate and the back room a spawning place for juvenile delinquency. And the students don't help much. There seems to be something during the formation of a juvenile mind that when his teachers or his parents catch him doing wrong or they try to tell him it's bad, he prides himself in seeing how long he can get away with it under covers. Seems to be the stylish thing to do to outwit your parents and teachers. As the youngsters grow older, they invariably find out how infantile and stupid this is, but sometimes it's too late. Does that sound kind of stuffy, Ma? What do you think?
Sounds like the truth. Let me hear the rest of it.
Well, you know how kids are. Sometimes they resent it if they think you're lecturing them. Maybe they could have been with Ben and I tonight. It might make a difference. Well, I don't want to make this too long, Ma. I think maybe I ought to finish up something like this. From this malt shop on the corner in that back room, our young boy gets a good shove down the road of self-degradation. He has the right connections, and it isn't too long before he graduates the liquor in the back room for something he thinks it's far better, narcotics. He's heard that, unlike liquor, you can't smell it on his breath, and he's a real veteran now. He has hangovers. He's heard that narcotics doesn't leave you with a hangover. So it doesn't take too long before, in police parlance, he's hooked. Living in this day and age, he thought that they taught him well in his economics and civics classes. He thought he knew what post-war inflation was all about. He didn't have the vaguest notion of the cost of his daily supply of narcotics once he was hooked on it. He found that before long, he had to have his daily dosage. In no time at all, he found that it was all he could do to get by on $30 a day. That's what it cost, Ma. $30 each and every day, or he became violently ill, so sick that he couldn't seem to function properly. Well, in order to maintain his daily needs, he got a gun, and he robbed, and he beat people, and he stole. He shared with his girlfriend, and he dragged her down with him. He ended up on the roof of a hotel, trying to shoot his way out. Well, the boy was 20 years old, his girlfriend was 18. 2 years ago, they both sat out there in a high school auditorium during an assembly. He went a long way, didn't he, in his 2 years out of high school? He was taken into custody on the night of August 7th. He was crying when we put the handcuffs on him. He was crying when we left him in his cell at the county jail. I guess he's still crying. Now, what do you think, Ma? That's just rough. I haven't...
Mm-hmm. Will they believe it? You think it'll do any good?
Well, I don't know, Ma. It's up to them.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On November 9th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 83, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial.
And now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you. Friends, there are many cases on record of two people, not related, looking so much alike it's hard to tell them apart. A quick check of fingerprints, however, easily proves who's who. Now, at first sight, you could just as easily be fooled by king-size cigarettes. If you were to place a Fatima and any other king-size cigarette side by side, you'd find they look identical. But believe me, there's a real difference. In Fatima, that difference is quality. Quality that gives you extra mildness, a much better flavor and aroma. Compare Fatima with any king-size cigarette. The size is the same, now the price is the same. But in Fatima, the difference is quality. Buy a pack tomorrow.
Rex Martin Burley was found guilty of 3 counts of robbery in the first degree and was sentenced to the state penitentiary where he is now serving his term. First degree robbery is punishable by imprisonment from 5 years to life.
The Federal Civil Defense Administration will send you an air raid instruction sheet if you will write the Superintendent of Documents, Washington, D.C., enclosing 5 cents in coin or stamps.
You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, portions transcribed from Los Angeles. Stay tuned for Counter Spy, next over many NBC stations.
That's it for this episode of Case Closed. I hope you enjoyed our stories this time. You can find more from Danger with Granger, Dragnet, past episodes of Case Closed, and everything else Relic Radio at the website, relicradio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is there, and our donate button. If you're able to help out, would like to help support this and all of the shows, give that button a click. We've got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts, though any amount is always appreciated. My thanks to everyone who has been able to help out, and thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Wednesday with Sherlock Holmes and Boston Blackie on another episode of Case Closed.